All right, here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio Online. Thank you, BBS, for making this possible. I welcome everyone here. Today is Monday evening. It is March the 7th, 2016. My name is Gijs Minderhout, calling from Magalia, California. And I know that tonight we will continue with last week's topic on Voyagers. And it was very interesting last week. And had a great response from the audience, and we'll see what will happen tonight. In the meantime, you know, this is a simulcast with a conference call. We have several people on the phone currently, and I saw somebody else join in. Welcome to the call. If you want to, please say your name and location.
Marilyn from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Marilyn. Good evening to you, and welcome to the call.
Thank you, Heis.
All right. And Morgan and Carolyn, I think I have, Morgan, I have your email address too, right?
Oh, yes, I hope so.
I believe so. So I'll get you guys connected, all right?
Oh, thank you.
All right. And then welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Welcome to you, Don. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Evening, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Joni in St. Louis.
Hello, Joni. Good evening and welcome to the call.
Thanks.
Well, for some people, it's dark already, but here in California, it'll be light for another half hour or so.
Yes. And welcome to the next call. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Marilyn in Flagstaff.
Hello, Marilyn. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, Gail from New Jersey.
Welcome to the call. Good evening. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for being here, Gail.
Always good.
Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
My name is Raiden Knight, Cave Creek, Arizona.
Hello, Raiden. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a fun weekend with Wynn up there in Sedona. Boy, oh boy, is the energy coming in positive now.
All right. And I welcome all those who joined in on BBS Radio Online. Thank you for being here. 1 minute away from the hour when we'll be here shortly, I hope.
We've got to have him have some sort of gathering so we can all come in expensive. It'll be really good for all of us.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I welcome the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Catherine from California.
Good evening to you, Catherine.
Thank you. Good evening to you.
I got Matt Kahn's book in today. Catherine?
Yes?
I received Matt Kahn, his book today.
No, I haven't seen it.
I did. I did receive it in the mail.
Which one is that?
The title of the book is...
Oh.
I need to think of this. All. No, everything that arises, love that.
I think
good evening. Welcome to the Chain and Location.
Hi, it's Wynn.
Hello, Wynn. Good evening. Welcome to the call.
Hi, Wynn.
Do I sound okay?
You sound okay.
Okay.
That's exactly how you sound.
Uh-oh.
You know what the term okay is from originally?
No.
It was from in the war fields when there were zero killings. Okay, zero killings.
Oh.
How interesting.
Thank you.
Yes.
However.
Is Terry here?
She's not, she has not arrived yet.
Terry?
In the meantime, I welcome the next caller here. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Mark out here in Los Angeles.
Good evening, Mark, and welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Mark, have you been on the calls before?
Maybe a long time ago.
What part of L.A. are you in?
Right now I'm in Santa Monica.
Oh, that's one of the best parts.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I used to live in L.A.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please name a location. And a chance for the next person. Hello, Terry.
Hi, this is Terry in Sonora.
All right. Welcome to the call, Terry.
Thank you. Let me hear you.
All right. Great to have you.
All right. Let's get started. How's that sound?
Wonderful.
Who's clapping? That is Layden.
Hello.
Who was clapping? Who was clapping?
I was clapping.
You were clapping. Okay.
I was clapping when you announced you're going to start.
All right. Well, I was lying because I never start. There's no such thing as a start and an end. That's just an illusion in this realm.
Ah, yes, Master.
Real quick in between, today is Marilyn Kay, her birthday in Oxford, so keep her in our minds.
Okay, good. Happy birthday.
She's not here?
No. Oh, I'll give her a call later.
All right.
How's that?
Yeah, nice.
Okay.
Actually, sweet.
Good.
All right, your sound is so-so, Wynn, but let's see how it goes, yeah?
What did you say? My sound is
your
so-so?
Your sound quality is so-so, but you're well understandable, so let's see how it goes.
Okay.
Shall I move the line, or do you want to keep it open?
I'll leave the line.
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. I'm going to leave.
All callers are unmuted.
This is March 7th, 2016. Wynn and Terry in Sedona, everyone everywhere, and another new moment in the birth of the universe. Do you ever think like that? Do you ever think that you're actually a miracle? That the fact that you exist is miraculous? And that you have so much potential, all of us do, that we hardly ever step into our potential. And it's not our fault necessarily that we don't do that. It's that we all have been clouded over. So it's hard for us to believe we have the potential. We're so used to all of the obstacles and resistances in this realm. You know, last week I read that thing about the Ra Confederation, and I got a lot of emails about that. You know, that's something that, I don't usually refer to other people, but that was a pivotal thing. Did you guys like that? I think you did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also very much liked when you talked about the sun being direct radiant light and the moon being a reflection. I think that's a very valid point as well.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it doesn't make the moon bad, although it could, because the reflected, you know, a lot of magical things relate to the moon. Spells, etc. So, hang on. Let me mute everybody. Who's that?
I'm here. Dharmananda's here.
Hi, Dharmananda.
How you doing?
Now, how's your hips and all that stuff?
Still hurting a lot. Today, you're not hurting so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
I can't afford it.
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. I muted you. So, we're talking, you know, those of you that have been on the line and coming to the calls for a few years have grown so much, at least in, you know, there's two things I think we grow in here. One of them is we grow into how the universe works, and that we are part of the universe, and that as we learn how the universe works, to a certain extent, we learn how we work. And the challenge of life is to learn how you work, that you're an operational intelligence in a body, and how do you operate your body? How do you operate your life? How do you have mastery so that you can do things as a cause rather than an effect? You know, we're just, I've made the mention of the sun and the moon, and the sun being an outgoing expression of energy, and the moon being a reflective energy. So the moon essentially operates, at least at the level of planetary operation, as an effect, to some extent, an effect of the sun's outgoing energy. And as we go through our life, each of us, from moment to moment, is operating as an effect or a cause. And when you're an effect, you feel ineffectual, okay? You feel like everyone is on top of you. And you're responding to everyone else's energy. And when you're a cause, you're creating space around you. And when you're a cause, I don't mean a control factor. When you are like the sun, you are radiating into your space. And I remember one teacher years ago said, be like the sun. The sun doesn't care who it shines on. It shines on everyone. And when you tap into that place in yourself, then you are radiating outwards and shining into your space. And whoever's there, who's open to receive it, gets that radiation. And you are now part of the team that's lifting the vibration of planet Earth. And so every day is a challenge. And because you know this, it doesn't mean to judge yourself when you're not doing it. You can't do it on demand. You can't say to yourself, okay, I want to shine now. I want to be the light. I want to uplift people. You just start doing it. Some of you do it. And some of you feel it on our Sunday calls in particular, that ability to be the light, to be the portal for the light is probably a better verbiage to describe that, so that this energy that flows through the universe flows through you. And either it flows through you and you are flowing it out towards other people, or you are a filter. You obscure it and you contract yourself so the energy doesn't move, get stuck. You know, it's putting like a shade on a light. And so part of everyone's job is figuring out how they obstruct that. And I suppose part of one's learning experience is, first of all, to believe that that is true. Because most people wouldn't even believe that. So when a person first gets the realization that it's true, that there's an energy flowing through everything, and then it's trying to flow through you, and you're in some way, shape, or form, you're blocking it. And then once you realize that, now your life becomes a constant challenge of learning, maybe rather than challenge, exercise is a better word, of learning how to unblock yourself so that energy can flow through. And it happens in increments. It doesn't, at least for most people, as I see it, it's you learn a little here. You unplug something there. And step by step, you're working on it. And one day, like it's a surprise, suddenly you feel peaceful. You feel relaxed. You feel neutral. And the energy flows through you. And you say, I saw that. I got it. And went, that was it. That was it. And then, if you're like most people, you suddenly jump on that and you say, I got it. Look at me. I'm the light. and then you blow it. You fall off. You go back into your ego, because you even when this is occurring, you have to learn to stay neutral with it. Because if you get excited, if you start patting yourself on the back, and it's okay if you do that, you know, just notice that you lose the flow. You lose the flow because you're suddenly, you were in the flow, and now you're suddenly looking at yourself. So you stepped out of the flow to look. And if you stay looking, the flow stops. So I used to go through this. I understand it well. It's like being able to hold the space of the flow. And to do that, you have to let go. You have to not worry what people think. You have to not be concerned if you look good or not. You have to be spontaneous. And that's difficult. Difficult to be spontaneous, but in a moment that you do it, you'll know that you did it, and you'll understand. Every one of us has our Waterloo, that thing that we don't do, and it holds us back. We don't express it. We clench ourselves, and it's different for everybody. We are all on a evolutionary track. Evolutionary means if you're on an evolutionary track, And I say everyone is on an evolutionary track, but some people are moving very, 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 very slowly because they are either suffering or enjoying the fruits of this realm too much. And they, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do that. You should do it, okay? You should enjoy this realm. And you should enjoy the miracle of your life. And in order to tap into the creator side of you, the creator part of you, you have to let go. You have to let go of the lower parts. Not easy to do. Well, in any case, I was going to talk about one of the books that influenced me early on, because when I first started talking to the Elohim, if you just take the picture of it, here I was with a woman that was having panic attacks that would suddenly stop whatever else we were doing and say, those guys want to talk to you. And this voice comes through her that says it created the universe. And I said, no way. They couldn't be that. Why are they talking to me? And I started asking them loads of questions. And I was trying to trap them. I was trying to find where they didn't sound authentic. Or if they answered a question like, so how did you create the universe? It wouldn't make sense to me. And all their answers kept making sense. And I said, and of course, then there was the miracle with my sister. And we've seen other miracles on this line. And then it was like, I can't be the only one that is connecting to these guys or having this experience. And I started looking everywhere for validation. And I've gone through some of the things that I found. For example, and I'm not going to, I'll just mention it. I found that amazing article from the Journal of Philip Dick, who is a science fiction writer, who after he died, his stories ended up being made into movies. And Terry and I just watched one of his movies. We actually watched it twice because it was, I'm just curious how many of you ever saw this movie. Okay, I never saw it before, even though I've talked about Philip Dick a number of times. And he wrote this thing about wanderers. He called them, it was in the 70s, and he called them pluriforms of light. And he talked about the Elohim and how they came into this realm and how they knew that they were doing a great sacrifice to come into this realm, and that this realm was separating and the dark was breaking off. And there were volunteers that came into the realm to stop the separation. And he called it a sacrifice because once you came into this realm, once you took a body, you would forget that you did that. And now you're in this dark place filled with all kinds of agendas and all kinds of horrible things. And you end up becoming the dark. Many of us became the dark. And he said it's the ultimate sacrifice. And the indication was over many lifetimes, you would then know how the dark worked and you would be able to transmute it. I mean, it doesn't mean you transmute the dark and turn the dark white, because the dark would want to have to do that out of free will. But you start transmuting the energy of the realm so that all of those people who have been trapped by the dark start to get free, one by one by one. And it can take a long time, and it's taking a long time. And those of you that keep coming into our calls and keep being attracted to this work, I don't think you would stay attracted if you were not one of those people that came into this realm to help transmute the darkness. And, of course, you wouldn't understand what we were saying. It wouldn't make sense to you. You'd go somewhere else where things made sense, like, I got to make a lot of money, or I got to do this, or I got to do that, or life is horrible. And all those times you're saying life is horrible, you're learning about the dark. You're learning about being trapped in this realm. And it can take 1,000 lifetimes to get this down. And of course, we have learned the Ra group, who was speaking to us in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce and through Carla Rucker, is the group's soul made up of the people like you and me, okay, that went through the darkness and graduated. And now they hang out as a group on the other side, helping planetary populations break out of darkness. And so we are group souls in the making. And part of succeeding in this is that you have to create a very strong intention to break the mold, to break your own patterning, to break your own conditioning, to break your identification with the dark, either being part of it or against it. You can't be either. You just have to notice it and be on the awareness for other people that want to break through the dark. And that it takes diligence, it takes intelligence, it takes intention, it takes all you got for all of us. It's a challenge, but you can do it. You can do it just because you're hearing this right now. Everyone is hearing this. They adopt that challenge, and we are giving so many tools and so much connection that if you adopt it and you use it, you'll do it. And it doesn't have to be through us. There's loads of paths in this realm. There's paths, you know, I won't say not religions, but spiritual groups dedicated to this breaking out of the strictures of the dark. And the more I go, the more I keep learning about this, and it just blows my mind. I'm learning things that I never believed could exist. For example, I was mentioning Philip Dick, and that Terry and I watched this movie last night. Got a question. I'm going to open up my mic. I just want to ask everybody a question.
All callers are unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. How many of you saw the movie Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Classic. You know, did you know that was Philip Dick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
at the
well,
time.
Well, I never saw it. I never saw it. And we looked at it.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
We watched it the night before last, and then we had to watch it again to take it all in. And I think what blew me away in The Blade Runner is, you know, I had already connected with Philip Dick and kind of really liked him. But I'd never, well, I probably had seen some of his movies. I can't remember which one. Some of them were bigger than The Blade Runner. But the theme of The Blade Runner was cloning. And that it was, they were manufacturing people to do their labor, okay? It was in the future in Los Angeles. And who was the star? Terry, who was the star of the movie? Oh, the guy who was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harrison Ford. Right. Okay. And he was, there were some of these clones, they didn't call them clones, they called them another name, but they were clones. They were manufactured humans. Some of these clones were going berserk and getting violent unexpectedly. And he was supposed to kill these clones. But they weren't. But they weren't really people. They were clones. So you know, the question of the movie was a clone a person? Was he really killing people? Well, that was in the movie. But just over the past months, I have been learning a lot about clones, and that their cloning is. Now, if you've never looked this up. It's hard to find. And, I mean, when I started to discover it, I was asking our sources, is this true? Is this true? Because cloning is a very common occurrence right now. And people are being replaced by clones. There's people that are spending money. You're not going to see this advertised, but there's people who are spending money so they can live forever. And the way they live forever is by having a clone of themselves and moving their consciousness moves from the present body to the clone body, and then it moves to another clone body. You know, when we were studying the Anunnaki, and I don't know if you know, some of you I know who the Anunnaki is. And the Anunnaki was an ET race that came to Earth to mine gold, and they created hybrids of them, their genetics and ape genetics, to create a human or a being that would do their labor for them. And the humans that they created started to reproduce, and the Anunnaki acted as gods for these humans. And that, if you ever read Michael Tellinger, which is another really good book for the book club. Okay, Michael Tellinger wrote a lot about this. He lived in South Africa, and he actually discovered the gold mines where the Anunnaki were mining gold. And he goes into the Old Testament, and God in the Old Testament, the idea of God, and all the things God was saying in the Old Testament. And it's pretty evident whoever was God in the Old Testament was not very loving. And there was more than one of them. There was Yahweh, there was Jehovah, there was the Elohim, there was Baal, and probably more. And that Michael Tellinger makes the case pretty convincingly, and other people also concur with this, that the gods of the Old Testament were actually the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki were the space people that created the hybrid humans, and then they became their god. They weren't God. They were advanced humans. And in one of the sessions we did, now the Anunnaki are fairly well known in certain circles, and they were always said to live a very long time, sometimes thousands of years. And people just assumed it was because they had some advanced bodies that could endure that long in this realm. And it came through our sources unexpectedly. They said the reason the Anunnaki could live so long was because they had clones of their bodies. And as soon as the body started to deteriorate, then they would jump into a clone that looked just like them. It was them. It was their DNA making up the clone. And so they could give the illusion of being immortal because they would jump from one clone body to the next for thousands of years and maybe longer, who knows. And so this is one of the ways that the in the Old Testament and in the early populations of this planet, at least early meaning, you know, maybe 20,000 to 10,000 years ago.
What was the title of the book, Michael Challenger?
Slave Species of the Gods, okay? Slave Species of the Gods. I mean, his chapter on the Old Testament is amazing because he pulls all these quotes out of the Old Testament, and whoever was God in the Old Testament was telling people to kill their children, cut your arm off, put your eyes out, you know. I mean, and supposedly the Anunnaki dropped a nuclear bomb on Sodom and Gomorrah, and they did it to scare people. And of course, the Bible talks about this big explosion and don't look back, okay? And this was not God punishing people. This was the Anunnaki trying to control everything. And some people say they're still trying to control things. And behind some of the negative stuff in the world, there could be the Anunnaki. When you have the gods of Egypt, it was probably the Anunnaki. When you have the gods of Greece, it was probably the Anunnaki. Now, there's a big question mark about where they are now. And one of the interesting things about the Anunnaki is they called themselves the Elohim. And I knew this when I started to talk to the Elohim. And I had a lot of concern. What if I'm talking to the Anunnaki? Now, the Anunnaki wasn't all bad, okay? And I'm not going to go into it in depth, but there were two factions of the Anunnaki. One of them was creating the humans and wanted to evolve the humans back to Godhead. And the other faction wanted to enslave enslave the humans or kill them. And from the Anunnaki point of view, the humans were their possessions. So it didn't matter if they killed them. And so it's like a clone. If you saw Blade Runner, the whole thing was brought up, whether it was unethical to kill a clone. And if you were killing one of God's creatures or just a manufactured human, that that had all the attributes of being a real person, but wasn't. Or was it? You know, what's a real person at this point? If the Anunnaki, in all of our questions, there is the celestial Elohim. And if we have it right, and everyone has to figure out for themselves, if we do, we put it out there, and the celestial Elohim were pure energy forms. And they said they didn't take bodies because they had to hold the space at the top of the matrix. And if they took bodies, nobody would be holding the space. But some of them took bodies. Some of them took bodies and came into this realm. For example, we learned that the Mormons, and we've said this before, were started by the Elohim. Elohim is the word the Mormons use for God. And it was started to be a place where Elohim souls could incarnate and have a religion to remind them of who they were. And if you know Mormons, you know Mormons are different. And it's not just their religion. They tend to be very attractive. They tend to have a lot of energy. They don't know this. They don't know what I just said. But their religion is the only religion I've ever heard of that tells their followers, when you leave this realm, you're going to go out and create planets and galaxies, which is what the Elohim did. So the Anunnaki were originally Elohim. And they came into this realm, and I would guess that they came in and were working with the Elohim in terms of developing races, developing DNA, and at some point they said they wanted the realm for themselves. And this happens with a lot of the groups that come in from higher realms. They want to possess the realm. And it feels like they own it. And they're creating humans by genetic manipulation, and they think they own the humans. And they don't. Because once something exists, it immediately has its own path, its own evolution. It's an evolving thing in this realm. Every one of you is an evolving piece of all that is in this realm. Do you get that? You're an evolving piece of all that is. It lives inside you. And when you tap into that, you now can create in this realm with all of that behind you or in you. And the key to it doesn't mean that you're omnipotent. It means that you still have to honor free will. So you can create as long as you don't violate the free will of anything else in this realm. If you have been observing our calls and coming to our Sunday calls, you know the Elohim is fairly transparent about how they operate. and they're operating with us, and they do create shift in this realm, or we create it with them, or we create it as a team. But they don't ever violate free will. It's like one time, if you're on our Sunday calls, this is a few years ago, we had a hurricane. We asked for the hurricane to back off because it was going down on New Orleans. And the Elohim, this never happened before or since, they started talking to the hurricane. And the hurricane was alive. Now, I didn't know hurricanes were alive. That was my first experience of it. But everything in this realm is alive. Even the rocks. What do they say about Jesus? Even the rock, he could hear the rocks and stones speak. Some of it moves at a very slow level, and some of it moves faster. But it's alive. And a hurricane had a consciousness, and they were talking to the hurricane, and they had to get the hurricane to agree to divert its energy. And after about a 15-minute conversation, the hurricane agreed, and they said, "Hurricane Gustav, we're diverting some of your energy to Sedona and some to Mount Shasta." And right after that call, I went on the internet, and everything was saying that Hurricane Gustav mysteriously dropped in strength. And by the time it hit New Orleans, it went from a level 4 to a level 2, and it wasn't a problem. And I believe even George Norrie, Terry said she heard George Norrie do a show about that a few days later, where they couldn't understand why it dropped in intensity. And because all the factors of weather and temperature, et cetera, would have indicated that Hurricane Gustav was supposed to increase in intensity. And it did. It dropped. And I asked later, I said, "You mean if we didn't do that, it wouldn't have dropped?" And they said, "Yes, that's true." Now, you see, these are things that you have to say, is that really what happened? Maybe it would have happened anyway. Maybe Wynn's sister, her lupus would have gone away anyway. And that's true. Maybe it's coincidence. But we've had so many of those things. And we are learning how to have an operational relationship with the higher realms and how they work and what we have to do to get them to work with us. And, of course, asking is a good first step. But a really good second step is getting into resonance with their frequency, feeling their energies, which we do on almost all our calls, particularly our Sunday call. And basically, the Elohim would be a higher aspect of you. And it's the law of one. And so you are tuning in to your higher aspect, which is helping to wake up all that is inside you so that you can be a co-creator with all that is, with God. And then you can create your life. I'm learning this just as well as you are. This is like an amazing thing to step into. I had the experience of this when I was younger and I used to hitchhike. And it took me my whole life to figure out how the things that happened could have happened. Because I had so many synchronicities. There's people on this call right now that are having that experience, that are having those kinds of synchronicities. And it happens when you travel, you let go of everything. And when you are free-flowing and you're not violating free will and you suddenly have an intention, and the universe responds. You know, I remember I would be like, I'd be thinking of a song and then suddenly they play it on the radio. Over and over again, that would happen. So things like that, where you're in the flow of the universe. And for me, it was always easier to do when I was traveling because I had no containment of anything. And, you know, one of the books that I had pulled out to read a section of, and I want to just jump and do that. Some of you have heard of Ramsa. And Ramsa is a being who is channeled by J.V. Knight. And, you know, she got fairly big. There's the Ramsa School of Enlightenment. And that I learned early on that Ramsa was part of the Ra group. There's the Ra, Ramsa. And at one point, Ramsa came through Dafti, probably three times, and was trying to decide if that was a good vehicle to express into. And that happened early on. So I was really curious about Ramsa. And I have this one book. There's many, many books of Ramsa. And there's a lot of wisdom in them. And Ramsa, in one of the books, even said he was part of a group, although he didn't call it the Ra group. I was pretty sure that he was. And this book is called Parallel Lifetimes, Fluctuations in the Quantum Field. And I just read a little bit so you get a flavor for this guy or this being. In the light of all eternity, it is when we err that we rush to judgment in philosophical terms and carry a postulate in our mind that is so complete in its intellectual or psychological or religious connotation that if you can quote that, there is this sense that you now have an understanding of the spiritual life. No one should ever rush to any certitude of judgment that suggests that because you can repeat the words should mean the end of it. That in this little phraseology is what I believe in. This little box, this little phrase in my mind, this is my spiritual life. This is what I believe in, and that is my philosophy. It is my religion. It is my psychological understanding of the meaning of my life. It is this little box, and we bring it forward when the time is right, when we want to be spiritual, and we push the buttons of that neuronet. And here comes those little sentences. They come up, and you can espouse them and say them, but when they are gone, they melt away, and now you are back within the whirlwind of your emotion. You have done your duty to reveal your mind. It took a long, long time in terms of eternity for God, who was so passionately in love with humanity. It took so long for that great passion of God experiencing itself to finally be as far flung as space itself. But God's passion, God's bliss, super consciousness, its passion for humanity, each human being, because in each human being is its mirror, God's mirror, and its potential the greatest. It took, in terms of eternity, quite an extraordinary journey of such a passionate being to develop out of its own creation towering concepts in invisible worlds, when space, as we see it, and indeed know it today, was only a potential, that the only thing upon the vista, and the platform of reality was each engagement of Creator, its creation of its own consciousness, and energy when unfolding out of each of those consciousness and energy ideas that ideas took form. They took form, it is when a barren landscape, vast into the nothing, started to take on a pictorial dimension. Those ideas were being formed, experiences occurring. And God built the most wondrous and fantastic planes, did so at no urgency, did so at no urgency for what should be known of urgency. And this great being, this superconscious, all-in-all powerful creator, to barren mind, barren consciousness, developed from it, mind dimensionalized a barren vastness into a singular beauty. And it kept on and on and on and on, and each level was only because that this being had reached a parameter of collective self-realized thoughts that such outstanding beauty in the dimensions that this God consciousness and energy had created out of its own self ran into the concept that could not be maintained on that level, because the concept was a quantum leap into a new idea, and it leapt into the mind of God. Well, those of you who have been privy to one of our things we do every so often on Monday nights, how the Elohim created the universe, where we actually talk to them, and they tell us. And Ramtha is describing a fairly close kind of look at how that worked, because what happened was there was one dimension that led into another dimension, and the creation started creating each other and going down. And then finally, I'm skipping some stuff here, took an unimaginable amount of time, but time was not the law, but used in the law for dimensionalizing thought. You see, there was no time. I mean, you're creating from nothing. Can you create from nothing? Yes, you can. You just don't know how. You don't know how to let go of all the things that are, trapping you. Let's see here now. It's almost time to end this call. He talks about how it got screwed up, okay? As you sit here today before me, you were once unimaginably beautiful. You were once unimaginably imaginably. You were once a great caretakers of a self-loving God, that even the flower and even the insect of which that God created brought the nature of bliss to God, who had created something so lovely. In its greatest accomplishment, a body in which that loveliness could be appreciated. You stand here, sit here, on the precipice of some dramatic changes, not only geologically speaking, but consciously speaking. Indeed, you are here today to begin to relearn what you know, but in a much more in-depth field. If you are to save yourselves, then you have to remember with what faculty you have the ability to do so, that with. And unless you know those faculties, you are the blind leading the blind, and into the ditch you go. This beautiful nature of God has been lost, because as the human experience becomes thicker in its emotional expression, it loses its creativity. And only through magnetism and gravity does it draw into its whirlwind, into its life, that which supplements its feeling character, its emotional character. The great God of your being is not that God is dead. It is that you are dead. And in this whirlwind, you have perpetuated this through generation after generation, to where you are so heavy in mass, so heavy so caring about the mass, but only to the ends, not that the mass could create, but to leaping into maturity of the mass so you could participate in this river of adult emotions without ever having to create anything except keeping your body fit enough to have that experience. And I'm not going to read any more. I just wonder, that was Ramtha. It sounds like the Ra group to me, or part of it. And, of course, we have been blessed to have Carla Ruckert, who was the channel for the Ra material for so many years in our calls before she passed away. And we'll probably hear from her again. We have. Those of you that don't come to our Sunday calls, Carla, you know, she died, I think, in April or May of last year, and she was a regular attendee in our Sunday calls. And I have to do a Sunday call and start talking about her a little bit, and she shows up. She's probably paying attention to us now, and if I turn it over to Terry, she'd say hello. But we don't have time, so Carla, we love you, and maybe we'll see you this Sunday. I'll try to talk about this stuff and give you a window if you want to talk to us. And on that note, thank you.
All callers are unmuted. All callers are unmuted.
Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you, BBS. Thank you, Hayes. Thank you, Marilyn and Marilyn and Marilyn. And and any other Marilyns, and happy birthday
to
everybody.
Love to all. Be well.
Your birthday. And,
thank you, Wynn. Awesome call.
Thank you.
Great call.
Thank you.
Another great learning session.